Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and while most of the world's attention has been focused on the uprisings against aging dictators in the Middle East and North Africa, another African country, Zimbabwe, is facing its own battle. There, the longtime president, Robert Mugabe, has unleashed a new campaign of violence ahead of elections that the 87-year-old leader once held in June. Mugabe is one of the only international friends the embattled Libyan leader Muammar Gaddafi has left. There's even some speculation that Mugabe would offer Gaddafi sanctuary in his country if he chooses to leave. Over the past few months in Zimbabwe, hundreds of officials from the opposition party, as well as human rights activists and anyone else not seen as in support of Mugabe, have been arrested or beaten or tortured or killed. Here in the studio to talk about the future of that country is journalist and author Peter Godwin, who was born and raised in Zimbabwe. Welcome back, Peter Godwin.
Thank you.
And he's just written a new book about his home country called The Fear, Robert Mugabe and the Martyrdom of Zimbabwe. For the book, he secretly traveled to the country after the 2008 elections when President Mugabe refused to give up power despite being defeated at the polls. Why did you have to go secretly?
Well, I'm not really flavor of the month there. I mean, I've written things that have irked them before and written books, and it dates really back a quarter of a century, which is just how long this has been going on. 25 years ago, the Matabeleland massacres in 83. And as a young rookie reporter, I worked on that story and helped to break it. So really, since those days, it's quite difficult for me to go home.
Just to make the geographical segue from North Africa to South, we had the former Libyan ambassador to the U.S., Ali Ojaleh, on our show yesterday, now defected from the Gaddafi government. Robert Mugabe is a longtime friend of Gaddafi. There's even been speculation that Mugabe would offer him sanctuary. How did this friendship come about? And does it surprise you that Mugabe is maybe the last leader still endorsing Gaddafi's rule?
No, it doesn't surprise me at all. And in fact, there have been reports, too, that Mugabe has aided the Gaddafi loyalists by sending either arms and even possibly soldiers. There were reports of transport planes going from Harare to Tripoli. Gaddafi has been a great friend of Mugabe's over the years. He's been generous with oil deals. He has helped Mugabe financially and Mugabe's party very consistently. And in many ways, they're cut from the same cloth. If you look at their rhetoric, sometimes it's almost interchangeable. So it's no surprise that they're great mates. And again, remember that Zimbabwe is now acquiring something of a reputation as a repository for overthrown tyrants. We already have Mengistu there from Ethiopia. So Gaddafi would be in good company.
So Mugabe lost the presidential election in 2008, but remains in power. What happened?
Well, he simply didn't accept it. And I mean, if we're doing the segue around African geography, we could do a side trip to the Côte d'Ivoire, to Ivory Coast, where you had a very similar situation with Laurent Gbagbo, who lost an election and wouldn't accept it. And
who's now apparently going to go. Are there echoes there for Mugabe making him more vulnerable?
There are, but sadly it's a little late in the sense that the 2008 elections was where Mugabe was defeated. This election spun out of his control, notwithstanding intimidation and various bits of finagling. But our problem was that in Zimbabwe's case, the local regional power is South Africa, and South Africa in many respects has been enabling and defending Mugabe. In the case of Côte d'Ivoire, the parallel would be Nigeria, and actually Nigeria has been the honest broker there. The minute they had the elections in the Ivory Coast, Nigeria backed the real winner, Alassane Ouattara.
Life expectancy is shockingly low in Zimbabwe. The World Health Organization in 2008 said that the healthy life expectancy for men and women is about 33 years old. Mugabe is 87. AIDS is rampant. Can you set the scene for us? What is life like in Zimbabwe day to day? And does his age even become a disconnect in more, you know, in a deeper way than it would in other places?
I mean, things had got extremely bad in Zimbabwe. It also has the highest ratio of orphans in the world. At one point, the hyperinflation was so bad that the currency was halving in value every 24 hours. Mm. In the last year, it's stabilized somewhat because we now have this very bizarre hybrid government, a kind of government, a so-called government of national unity between the opposition and Mugabe's party, which was sort of foisted on the opposition by SADC, the regional organization, and by the South Africans. So the schools have reopened to some extent, the hospitals have reopened to some extent, and things are mildly better. The problem, however, is there's no political resolution at all. And we see this trend, again, a disturbing trend in Africa, where when the wrong people lose elections, it's declared a draw. We saw it in Kenya. In Ivory Coast, the South Africans, you know, Thabo Mbeki, who was supposed to be the mediator there, tried to do the same thing, and indeed in Zimbabwe.
I don't want to ignore race if it's a factor here. I know even in New York, there are some black nationalists who support Mugabe because of his history of coming into power in what was, a country in many ways like South Africa had been under apartheid, and he undertook programs of land redistribution based on race, taking it from white farmers who were seen to have had it illegitimately in some cases. And so there is a certain stripe of black nationalist who does not want to look at Mugabe as anything but a hero. Is there that in the country?
No, not at all. And I'm bewildered by it. I mean, I think that the last defenders of Mugabe all tend to be non-Zimbabweans who aren't well appraised of the actual situation on the ground. The fact is that by far the people who've been suffering, the people who've been tortured, who've been killed, who've had their houses burned down are black people. So it really doesn't seem to be a racial issue. And Mugabe is very, very good, however, at spinning the race issue, at spinning the anti-colonial rhetoric. He's terribly good at it. He's a very bright man and a very good manipulator, and he was played a great card with the white farmer situation. I mean, the media played into his hands, and so far as the media tended to get more interested in the story when the white farmers were attacked, when their farms were taken over, and they absolutely did own a disproportionately large amount of land, absolutely. But the interesting thing is that in 1980, when they were already getting ready to leave, when Mugabe came in, he explicitly asked them to stay on and to contribute to the new Zimbabwe by growing food, by feeding the country and the region, which they did. In 2000, when he sicked his militia onto the farms to drive the white farmers out, what's really interesting is that his real target wasn't the white farmers at all. It was the million black farm workers who worked on those commercial farms who supported the opposition. That was his real target.
More recently, there's been a brutal crackdown on dissidents in the last few months, from what I've been reading. Do you think, after looking at what's happening in the Middle East and North Africa, that it's harder for Mugabe to continue that kind of thing?
Well, I think it's certainly sent ripples of anxiety through his regime. They've watched what happened there, and they've watched what happened in Ivory Coast, and it's worrying them. I mean, we know this for a fact, because shortly after the Egyptian uprising, some dozens and dozens of Zimbabweans were arrested for the crime of watching the coverage on TV, and several of them have been charged with treason for that. So you can see they're enormously sensitive about the parallels.
Is there any interest or demand for outside intervention, not necessarily a military action like in Libya, but as much of America has learned in recent days and weeks, there was an international peacekeeping force in Ivory Coast, which became a little tougher more recently when the Gbagbo government was starting to crack down. Is there anything like that either in Zimbabwe or that Zimbabweans are asking for from any international institution?
Well, absolutely. I mean, what they certainly want is a free and fair election that is supervised and observed by international institutions like the UN to make sure that it's fair. And I'm not just talking about people parachuting in 3 days before the election. I mean, you really need people on the ground there months and months in advance to make sure that the electoral environment is a fair one.
Is there a vision of a post-Mugabe Zimbabwe?
Yeah, you know, the great thing about Zimbabwe, I mean, shattered as it has been in the last 10 years by this conflict, is that it is an extraordinary country with amazing potential. It had the highest literacy rate in Africa. It was adjudged to be one of Africa's great success stories and can be so again very, very quickly. The real tragedy about Zimbabwe is that the solution is so incredibly simple: free and fair elections. We don't need anyone to come in and nation build for us. The nation's already built.
But it's not always that simple, is it? I mean, in Ivory Coast, the candidate who is seen to have legitimately won that election, Ouattara, internationally recognized as having won that poll, there's a New York Times article today that says he may not actually be much better than Gbagbo, that fighters allied with the president-elect have been accused of killing hundreds of people themselves.
Right, and to be fair to Ouattara, he doesn't have complete control over this sort of ragtag rebels who are coming down, and Gbagbo has brought this situation on by not accepting the results of the election. But in Zimbabwe, what you have is there are certain other African countries that I've been to over many, many years as a correspondent covering Africa, where you go into some of these small African countries and they are wretched. They are blighted. They have bizarre colonial borders. They have no resources, and you wonder how they will ever really succeed as countries, as nations. Zimbabwe is not one of those countries. It has enormous resources. It has strong civic institutions. It has a big middle class. It's very educated. Really, if the Zimbabweans in Zimbabwe, if you do have a free and fair election, I think that it would be rehabilitated very, very quickly.
Peter Godwin, his new book about his home country is called The Fear, Robert Mugabe and the Martyrdom of Zimbabwe. Thank you very much. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And up next, Brooklyn writer Hamilton Kane on revisiting his Southern Baptist roots after living the New York secular life. Stay with us.